News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 15th of July, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour.
you know, they're here in spirit, I guess you could say.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
You may notice that, and Glenn, thank you for the cheer.
That's fine, yeah.
He's got his pom-poms under the counter in here.
Yeah,
how about
keep
push him back, way back. No, we won't use that one.
As you can already tell, neither Dave nor Steve is here. Mm-hmm. I fired them both. They were getting on my nerves, and, you know, I just kicked them. I don't know.
Mm.
First two people to show up at a studio get their job. No. I don't know actually where either one of them is today, but I'm sure wherever they are,
they're on their way.
Having a great time there. Exactly.
Mm. Let's forget computer questions and just play music. What do you think?
Oh, I love this idea. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
First of all, what is it that your shirt says there? I've been trying to make heads or tails of that.
And it says Linux.
Okay, Linux.
And then mirrors it backwards in the X in the middle.
Oh, I see. Okay, X, Linux, and then the boom.
Yeah.
All right, okay. I get it now. See, but if you're not a computer wizard like you are, then you have to stare. And don't you hate that, you know, when women, they put stuff on their shirts.
Yes.
And you can't figure it out. I mean, if it's an easy saying, ladies, go ahead. We can just glance.
Yeah.
But if it's difficult, then we have to stare at
right.
your shirt, and you think that we're concerned with what's underneath it. And you
right.
get, it's embarrassing, and yet you have to find out what the shirt says.
That's exactly
you see,
right.
And it's not fair to the men who are in your world. Just don't do that anymore.
Okay. It's right.
You can send letters to WHAM, Karen.
Well, it's true.
is there anyone on the planet who hasn't faced that pleasant problem?
Probably the ones on the planet have gotten slapped straight across the face.
Right.
What
are you staring at my...
Well, I'm trying to read your blasted shirt, that's
right,
all.
Right, right.
I get that a lot at Saturday. We have a coffee stand at the public market, the Flower City Coffee Company.
Right.
Another unsolicited testimonial.
That's the Flower City Coffee
And particularly in the summer, there are a lot of people who wear T-shirts that say things.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are ladies. And
in the summer, they're not covered by much.
Right.
I'm sorry.
So I always say, I'm sorry, what's your shirt say?
Yeah. Oh, see, now there's a way to get around it.
That's how you get around
it. Yeah, I can't see well. I'm not sure what you're... Yeah.
Uh-huh. And because his wife is there with him, you see. That's why he's got it, yeah.
You got to kind of look out of the corner of your eye. Or,
Well, I told you before I got into the news that I had a question. Is this a good time
this
for me?
This is a great time.
All right, I'll be
show
your first caller.
All right. Our first call. And our first caller, Glenn from the
I'm right
studio.
Over here, yeah. I got up about 5 o'clock in the morning a couple of days ago, and I had an idea for one of the columns that I write. And I went to the computer and I opened it up and I couldn't get it to do a blasted thing. Okay, well, I'll check my email first. And all kinds of things were happening. And then this little thing down in the right-hand corner kept saying, McAfee scanning. And it wouldn't let me do much of anything. And when I could do something, it was very, very slow. And I didn't know what was going on. And then my wife...
McAfee was scanning. That's
yeah,
what
that was going on. My wife came down, and she later that morning said, okay, I've changed it to start scanning at 1 in the morning on this particular day. Now, is it typical when your protector device or whatever the heck it is, you see how deep into this I am, not very. So,
yeah.
It's typical that now if I get an idea in the middle of the night and I want to get up and this happens, and you can't shut it off, it won't go away?
Here's the thing. McAfee. Mm-hmm. We love McAfee. The problem that I have with McAfee is that in particularly in version 8, it takes over the system.
Yeah.
It really wants 100% of the CPU to do its thing and doesn't care what you want.
Yeah, I'm protecting you. Sit down and shut up.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Wait your turn. That
we keep telling McAfee that's a bug. They keep telling us that's a feature.
Oh, yes.
They should be first.
It's a matter of an opinion here.
Right,
okay.
Right. Mm. And that's fine, you know, on a desktop, you set it to do whatever. We've also got it running, of course, on our servers at work, and you can't, our servers are 24/7.
Oh,
there is no downtime for our servers.
All right. Now, does that bother anything you're doing?
Yes. It causes many problems.
Mm.
At home, I've stopped using McAfee entirely.
Well, to replace it with something else or just forget it?
Oh, no, you got to have something running.
All right.
And I've been doing either AVG, which is free from gristsoft.com.
I guess I better write these down, huh?
Yeah, I guess you better.
AVG.
Antivirus Gristsoft.
Oh, V as in Victor.
Right.
Okay. Alpha Victor Golf.
Alpha, yeah.
All right, fine, whatever.
Abel Victor.
Yeah,
Charlie,
right, Charlie Gold. Jones, right.
Baker, right. Or Avast at Avast.com. Avast as in pirates.
A-V-A-S-T?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And either one of those is very good. Avast is kind of neat because when it updates the database, you get this little tinkle of music, and then it says, Avast has updated your database.
Very cool. And that excites you, does it?
Okay.
Kind of frightening, right. Actually. Yeah, well.
But, I love McAfee, but they just have this problem with it takes over the machine. Mm. I'm tired of it. I've stopped using it, AVG or Avast. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with, look, Steve Ray. Steve Ray. Yeah, well, with Steve Ray. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco with his own theme song.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton without a theme song.
Without a theme song. And at 19 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Joined by Steve Ray, who was detained by a short inspection by the police. I don't mean a short arm inspection. I just mean a short inspection, but he's here.
Well, that was last weekend. Getting in and out of the country is getting to be interesting.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well, Microsoft, I didn't even do a news item last hour, for heaven's sake. Microsoft has issued 6 security patches this week. 3 critical, 2 important, 1 moderate. The 3 critical patches were for Excel, Active Directory, and the .NET framework. All of them were for remote code execution exploits. That means someone could take over your machine from the internet and do anything they wanted. The 2 important publishers, 2 important patches are for Publisher and the Internet Information Server, which is Microsoft's web server. They're also both for remote code execution exploits, so I'm not certain why they're only important while the others are critical. Seems to me that any remote code execution exploit is critical. You be your own judge.
Does anyone still use .NET?
Everybody uses .NET. It comes with your machine.
Whether they know it or not.
Exactly.
Well, see, we get a lot of calls about that .NET user that shows up when some .NET update comes in. And what's this thing? And who put it there? Well, you did, but you didn't know it.
Right, exactly. It's part of what's there. And the last patch, the moderate one, is for Windows Vista Firewall. It could allow disclosure of your private information. I personally think that one was pretty critical, too. But for Microsoft, that's no big deal. Anyway, no matter how you rate them, make sure your system is updated. I know how annoying it can be to have to say yes to that nagging little dialog box and then wait for the downloads and wait for the installations and then reboot and then wait while it installs all that stuff during the reboot. But you should do it. It's important. I'd even say critical. And that's the thing that kind of annoys me. I don't know how Microsoft determines that one remote code execution exploit is critical and another is only important.
Well, it depends on how you define. They're all important.
No, critical is better. No. Stop.
Yeah, what's that level there? Yo?
Stop. I'm done with you now. Yeah, where's the level? Where does it end up? And apparently Microsoft has an odd idea of what constitutes bad or good or important or whatever. Anyway, actually, Glenn, of course, was our first caller. Our next caller, our first phone caller, is Ann from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ann. What's your question?
How do I get rid of pop-ups? This is the dummy who calls every 6 months.
That's fine. We love easy. No, they're not easy. None of the questions are easy. Are you using Internet Explorer?
I'm using my browser. I'm using Mozilla at your suggestion.
Good idea.
And it started a couple of weeks ago, but they're getting worse.
Yeah.
And this morning I had a lovely porn site pop up. It would have been nice if my grandchildren saw it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, that happened to Dave. Dave was talking about that one time. He had his grandson on his lap showing him some stuff, and all of a sudden, pop, 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 pop.
Oh, this was a good one.
They call that one a tornado. When you try to close
a tornado.
When you close one and 20 others spawn.
Yes. This was a good one.
No, congratulations.
Do you know which version of Mozilla you're running offhand?
No, I'm sorry.
There are pop-up blockers in the preferences of Mozilla, and it's slightly different place depending on which version you're running.
When I go in, when Firefox comes up, it said this site has blocked pop-ups or something like that.
Right.
Well, I don't know why they say that, because it certainly hasn't.
Yeah, well, what happens is this. It's a leapfrog. It's a game of leapfrog. What happens is programs like Firefox block pop-ups, and then the companies find a way around them, and then Firefox closes those holes, and they find a way around them. So we're kind of in the game of leapfrog. The pornographers have leapt ahead, catch up.
There's the pop-unders that
right.
technically aren't pop-ups.
Right.
So a new window spawns behind your current window.
What's likely happened is that it was a Java or JavaScript thing, and some of those are still getting through. I actually caught one the other day.
Is there any way, anything I can do to get rid of them?
Stop using the Internet.
Yeah, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but you can turn off, in the preferences, you can turn off things like Java and JavaScript, but that's under the content section of the Firefox preferences.
That will also disable some of the neat things you want to do on the Internet. That's
right,
the problem.
Right. There are a lot of sites now using Java and JavaScript and Flash. Flash can pop stuff up.
Yeah. You can try installing one of the commercial anti-pop-up programs. We like Stopzilla, the pop-up killer.
Yep.
Although you say that better than I do.
Stopzilla, the pop-up killer. Stopzilla at stopzilla.com. That may be able to handle them. It's, like I said, it's a game of leapfrog, and right now they're sort of ahead, but Stopzilla should be able to do the job. That is commercial.
You should also check to make sure you're running the latest version of Firefox, if you're running Firefox, which is 2.0.0.4. With every new update, they make the pop-up blockers better until, as Nick was saying, the leapfrog leaps ahead again.
Right.
So that's something to look at, too.
Okie doke. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, it gets annoying. The pop-unders are almost more insidious because you don't see they're there until you close your main window, and then there's 50 windows behind it.
Yep. I don't ever close my machine's on 24/7, and I don't ever close it. So I don't see if there are pop-unders, I don't see them.
Well, I make new windows. See, I'm torn between new tabs and new windows.
Oh, I love tabs.
The key combination to switch windows is easier than the key combination to switch tabs.
Yes.
So I end up making a lot of new windows. So I'll close a window, and then if something had spawned, it's above my other window that's already there. And
right.
Too many windows.
Too many windows. And not enough something. I don't know what.
It's the opposite of a window. A wall, I guess?
Yeah. Do you read Ubersoft?
No.
It's an online comic. And it's a company called Ubersoft. It's help desk. I don't know what the URL is. I think it's ubersoft.com.
.net.
The company is called Ubersoft, and they make a product called Nifty Doorways. And I forget what the new one is going to be called, but it's a very funny online comic. And something you just said triggered that. Now I lost what you said.
We need more doors.
Oh, Nifty Doorways. Yeah. Instead of windows.
Well, it was that a couple, 3 weeks ago? There was this news story about a guy who had bought a Google ad with a big banner saying, virus free, click here to be infected.
Yes,
and
yeah.
Hundreds of people were clicking there.
Yeah.
They weren't really infected. He was just doing it as a social experiment. But he's making money off of telling people they'll be infected with viruses.
And you can't help but admire him.
Yeah.
Not only is he probably, this is for his, like, bachelor's degree or master's degree, some sort of thesis he's doing, but on top of that, he's making money off of Google. Yeah. I don't know how you beat that. How I made money getting my master's degree. Not a bad deal, actually, when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
There's a whole, culture of people making money off of Google ads. I've got Google ads on a couple of my sites, and I make a buck here, a buck there. Some people are making fortunes off of it. So everybody go to SecurityTango and NickF.com and start clicking on links all over the place.
Well,
no, I'm not allowed to say that, actually. Google frowns on people who solicit clicks, and so I am not doing that.
Well, there was this... bottom of the hour. There was some insidious questioning about why Apple would make Safari for Windows, because it has a Google search and Google will pay Apple.
That's not a bad reason to make anything.
Yep.
If Google would pay me enough, I'd make something too.
Yeah.
Not that they would and not that I could, but if they did and I could and they did, I would. Thank you. Well, we're going to take a quick break here and hopefully adjust our meds. The mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in. His mellifluous tones will be bringing you the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really tune into Wham for. And then on the other side of that stuff, we will be back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 28 minutes after the hour, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbite only on 1180 W... Well, not just... It's on 1180 WHAM on the air. It's on the HD. It's on the web. It's everywhere.
In the words of Nick Francesco, remember, it's you, our valued listeners, who really make this program. We love you. And we have $25 for every... Never mind. I'm Glenn Lamberts on Rochester's news leader, News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Sounding even better in HD. High definition radio is on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Flashback to the 60s.
Isn't that Soupy Sales?
Are solely the responsibility of Glenn Lamberts and not this station or in particular me. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Lind.
And it's 33 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbite.
Now, wasn't that Soupy Sales that said to the, kids?
Oh, yeah, it was Soupy.
Yeah, kids, go to your parents' wallet.
Exactly.
He got in a lot of trouble for
president.
That.
Yeah, he did. And he got kicked off the air for a whole week.
There are quite a few radio DJs who have done that shtick.
Yeah.
There was one in Denver called Uncle Mike McEwen who said, now, boys and girls, I want you to go to your mom and dad's dresser on top. In the top drawer, there'll be a little steel tin. Open that tin and send me all of that stuff that looks like oregano. It's a ball. He almost went to jail for that. It was funny the way he did it, but
right.
Nevertheless.
That's funny.
Okay, well,
now, you talked about Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
What about Wesley Branch Rickey?
Well, what about Wesley Branch Rickey? What should I
be
saying?
He was the manager who had the guts to hire him.
Yes, he did. And, I was talking with one of the guys that does a show over on Hot Talk this morning about this whole time and why it happened. And it really, for obvious reasons, spelled the end to the old Negro leagues.
Right.
And I think pretty much everyone, although you miss the league, I think we can all say amen, we're glad that
it happened the way
it did. You know. But, there are a lot of people who took a big financial hit for doing some of this stuff.
Yep.
Because, the Negro Leagues represented a base financially for a lot of people.
Yeah,
so they had some courage, and I stand up and applaud them.
Then there's the Women's Baseball League during the war as well.
Right.
I wonder how much of that, when we hear about Rosie the Riveter and how many women entered the workforce because all the men were off fighting.
Right.
And that was... the only people left.
Well, and then when the guys came home, they were just supposed to meekly go back to, cooking and cleaning and being barefoot. Okay, yeah, right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wesley Branch Rickey not only hired Jackie Robinson, he also hired the first Hispanic superstar, Roberto Clemente.
Oh, really?
And he's also the guy who created the farm system.
But you know an awful lot of stuff.
I have an internet.
No, the Wikipedia is great.
And yes, either that or you've got a book there. And,
well,
and
here's here's
it. Used to be you had to have the book or you had to be smart. Now you just have to be able to type a URL.
Right. Got the 1914 picture of Cracker Jack Branch Ritchie as a member of the St. Louis Browns.
He was the Mahatma. That was him.
Yeah, what can I say?
All right.
Interesting, is it not, that the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants both moved to the West Coast.
Yep.
Not long after all of this, and expanding baseball there, some say part of that whole initiative.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was in my 20s before I realized that Stinkin' was not the first name of the Mets. At any rate,
oh, man, oh, we're going to get calls. Could we have your home phone number, please?
Well, no. I didn't like the Mets.
Oh,
I'm saying
right.
that this is what well, I was
that's,
taught.
That's what you were
one
taught.
Of the, one of the guys that, at work has a T-shirt. Why do they call it the World Series when it's always played in Brooklyn?
Oh, well, you know, unfortunately, I'm old enough to recall World Series games with literally school shutting down because they would always play them in the afternoon. You know, start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and the principal would come on the loudspeaker and say, "There will be no radios. This is a school, not a." And then he would say, "And excuse me, I've got to tune in the Yankees game." And then we'd all put our little buzz, and nobody would get anything done. And he knew what we wouldn't.
So. Yeah, they were playing in the afternoon because God did the lighting.
Exactly. And then, then the Dodgers won a big one, you know, and about three or four kids in school were going crazy with joy, and then they got beat up.
Yeah, right. Listen, one of my oldest friends has been a Browns fan.
Oh, my.
Throughout the 60s, 70s, when it meant something to be a fan.
You're talking football now.
Yeah, I'm talking football. But the point is, it's a group of people who never win a game.
Yes, exactly. A group of people who have no insignia on their head, on their helmets.
Right.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I hate to say this, when I was a kid in the 70s.
Oh, shut up.
It was,
just shut up.
It was the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series for like every year. Mm-hmm. And then the Pirates and the Cubs, not the Pirates, Pittsburgh, the Steelers, and the Cowboys in the Super Bowl almost every year.
So it's good to know there was some consistency in the world.
Yeah. Well, the Cowboys still are on the top of almost all, the book with the top 10 lists of everything.
Right.
The Cowboys are up there on a lot of the different categories. And it's really surprising.
Most drug arrests.
Yes, right. Yeah, I don't happen to be a Cowboys fan. Not that I dislike the Cowboy, yeah, all right, goodbye.
Yeah, right. I got time to actually take a call. Poor Russ has been waiting forever. Our next caller is Russ from Canandaigua, New York. Thanks for sitting through that, Russ. I'm not even a sports fan. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's up, Russ?
I own a small business in Canandaigua, and for the past 6 months to a year, I've been collecting customers' emails, and I'm ready to start putting them into some use. And I was told that I need to install a list server. Is that what I need, the program that I would need to start this?
You don't actually need one, but you probably want one. A list server is an automatic list management program. Major Domo is one of the biggest ones. And what it does is it manages the list for you. So someone sends a message, and it sends that message out to everyone else in the list, automatically lets you subscribe and unsubscribe by email address.
Okay.
So it's a lot easier than doing it yourself.
Yeah, if you want to set up something that only lets you send out mail, you have to set it up very, very carefully.
Okay.
But you need to do this on a server somewhere, on a machine somewhere, whether it's your machine or another machine or whatever. This is listserv is an example of a mailing list manager, and there are many of them. If you go to Google, you'll see, hundreds of them listed.
Well, and that's another thing you can do. You can use something like Google Groups or Yahoo Groups as your mailing list manager,
right?
And then not have to manage it yourself. You let them manage it for you.
I see.
Right. So if you go to Google and
that's what I did, and that's why I'm calling. There were so many to choose from and so many options.
Google is one of the best. Yahoo is very good in terms of setting up a group, and people can then look at all the messages online, or they can get them in their mailbox, or whichever way you want to handle it. And it's fairly easy to set up. They worry about viruses and hackers and spam in the group and all that other stuff. So letting them do that is never a bad idea.
Okay.
Do you have a website now? Check with your host who's hosting the website. Often they'll have a mailing list manager on that web service already. So if you want to handle it that way too.
Right. If you got a .com or whatever. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. I have sorely neglected the news. Internet Explorer and Firefox. It's a double play. The latest browser war dust up pits Mozilla's Firefox against Microsoft's Internet Explorer. But this time, the tiff isn't about market share. It appears that Internet Explorer may undermine Firefox's security when a net server clicks on malicious page links using an Internet Explorer browser, and Firefox also happens to be installed on the machine. In an interesting twist on browser-related security issues, security researchers said they have found a flaw in which Microsoft's Internet Explorer can cause Mozilla's Firefox to execute remote malicious code. Security firm Secunia released an advisory Tuesday ranking the flaw as highly critical, I should hope so. The vulnerability is confirmed on Firefox 2.0.0.4 in a fully patched version of Windows XP Service Pack 2. Basically, the end user must use Internet Explorer to navigate to a malicious web page and click on a link. The problem only occurs when the user also has Firefox installed. It does nothing if Firefox isn't installed. The link, according to Mozilla, can cause Internet Explorer to invoke another Windows program, in this case Firefox, via the command line, and pass that program the URL from the malicious web page. This can cause data to be passed from the malicious web page to the second Windows program, which could allow remote execution code execution in Firefox. It may be possible to use the same method in Internet Explorer to invoke action in other Windows programs, but none have yet been reported. Now, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on with this. Mozilla's pointing at Microsoft. Microsoft pointing at Mozilla, which puts out Firefox. Microsoft said they're not going to patch it because it's not their problem. Mozilla said it's going to patch the problem in the upcoming 2.0.0.5 release, and it will prevent IE from sending Firefox malicious data. And of course, since you know IE is in Microsoft program, Mozilla won't be able to fix that. So there is a fix out right now. Don't use Internet Explorer. If you have both installed on your machine, use Firefox. It's safer to begin with. It's better. In spite of the problems poor Ann is having, it prevents a lot of pop-ups. And if you're not using Internet Explorer, that malicious code thing is not going to work. So be a little careful.
Well, and the annoying thing is that there are some websites where you have to use Internet Explorer. So it's usually banking sites or things like that. So
right.
Call your bank and say...
It's lazy programming.
Right, it's lazy programming at the other end. Call your bank and say, I'm going to stop using your bank if you don't fix this, and if enough people do it.
That's right. That's how it works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Lori from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lori. What's your question?
Hi. I have a Toshiba Satellite laptop, and I was making a video in Windows Movie Maker. And when I finished the movie, it was almost done, and then all of a sudden I lost all control of volume, and now my computer has absolutely no volume control. It makes one little beeping sound, and that's it.
Is the volume control missing, or is it ignored?
It is, but when I start up my computer, it says cannot access volume control. So there's no little icon in the bottom right corner that has the volume.
And when you go to the control panels, is the sound control still there?
Yeah.
It's possible, in fact, may even be likely, that your system has something that you did corrupted the sound driver.
Mm-hmm.
So
probably Microsoft Movie Maker.
Probably Microsoft Movie Maker.
I would think so.
So if you were to go into your hardware devices, find your sound device, and double-click on it,
okay.
You would be able to, it opens up the properties window, and one of the tabs lets you reinstall the driver.
And I tried doing that, and nothing came out of it.
The next step is to go to the device manager, remove the sound card.
Reboot your machine.
Shut down, reboot your machine. Windows should find it again and reload the driver.
Yep, that happened too, and still no sound.
Go to the website of the computer's sound card manufacturer and download new drivers.
Yep, did that too.
Ooh.
All right, Lori, hang on so we can berate you for having done all this and not told us. And then we'll give you some more questions, some more solutions. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, know-it-all Lori, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. We still have Lori on the line, who is dribbling information into us a piece at a time, shooting down every one of our possible theories. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
All right. So, so far you've done everything right. This Toshiba satellite, I hate to ask. You get an error message that says it can't access the volume control.
That's right.
Yeah. What program would be trying to unboot?
I don't know. I guess maybe. I don't know.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
A laptop.
Yeah, that's the problem. I was going to say replace the sound card.
Which you can't do.
Well, you can add a new sound card if you have a PC card slot.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's two other things to look at. One, the real simple one, is the volume control up. And the other one is go into your BIOS and see if it has been disabled.
Okay.
I don't know why or how that would... Oh, you didn't try that one, huh, Lori?
I don't think I've done.
I don't know how that would have happened except as a glitch. What often happens is we get static.
Mm-hmm.
And the static does really weird things to machines. You know, you shuffle across the floor or whatever, and that can cause all kinds of problems. But I think that's the thing I would do next. I would check to see if the sound card has not been disabled in the BIOS.
Okay.
See, a lot of times we see this happening with games, where the game loads its own sound driver to make better sounds.
Right, but this happens on boot up.
Right. Well, see, I'm thinking Microsoft Movie Maker changed something in the sound control so it could handle the sound better. Maybe there's a preference inside of Movie Maker to deal with sounds.
Right, but the problem is that Movie Maker won't open right now because it says that since it can't access the volume control, that it won't open at all.
Right. Anyway, that's the thing I would try next.
Okay.
You've done everything else. I would try that next. And the only other thing is the coincidence of the sound chip dying. At that exact moment. I suppose that's possible.
And if that happened, is there anything that I can do about that?
Well, at that point, the only thing you can do is to add an external sound device that connects via USB or FireWire or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Depending on how new your...
Or PC card.
Or PC card. Right, yeah. All right. That's really all you can do at this point. I'm sorry.
If the unit's still under warranty, you can have them fix the internal sound card.
Yeah, it's not under warranty anymore.
I knew that was going to be back. Anyway, try that. Let us know one way or the other what happens.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Lori.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. This is the downside of laptops. With a regular machine, anytime you have any problems, it's simple. You know, whether you do it or you hire somebody to do it, you crack it open, you pull the offending card, you stick in a new one, and you go from there, you're on your way.
And even with all the modern desktops that have integrated sound, integrated LAN, integrated everything, PCI cards are significantly cheaper than PC cards for laptops.
Right. For $15, I can get a real nice sound card.
Yeah. That's probably close to $100.
Yeah, exactly.
For
exactly.
A laptop card,
and then
yeah.
Because it requires external speakers and everything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. Everybody's going to laptops. So I'm sitting in front of a laptop, but... they do have their downside, and that downside is definitely partly expense. Laptops are... I had an interesting discussion with two Mac fanatics. I saw my first iPhone this week. And,
which worked perfectly fine with Windows.
That's great. It was pretty nice. It was lovely, but the guy had one of the big laptops, the MacBook Pros.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that is? And the other guy had the little white one.
Yeah, the MacBook.
The MacBook. Oh,
yeah.
It was MacBook Pro. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I get it. And the Pro guy was saying that he was thinking of selling his Pro and just buying a MacBook because, he's got all kinds of stuff at home. But in terms of carrying around...
Yeah, the smaller
it's
and
It's annoying
lighter.
To
yeah.
drag this huge, jumongous thing around when all he really needs is the little laptop.
And then when you get it home, you plug into a big monitor if
exactly,
you want to. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not missing any power, it's...
Well, it is. It has shared video memory. That's the MacBook's right. biggest thing to make it cheaper.
But he doesn't do video.
Right. Yeah, if you're not doing Photoshop right. or Final Cut, it doesn't
right.
matter.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's his...
There's a big call on the net. People want the old 12-inch PowerBook back, which is the model I have. It was the Pro model in the consumer form factor.
Nice.
So it's a small, light, but still high-powered machine.
Why did they stop making them?
They have a 13-inch consumer model now.
Okay, then. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. If you're on the phone, stay on the phone. If you're not on the phone, why not? Give us a call. You know all the numbers. We're going to take a break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in to give us the news, the weather, the sports, all the important things, and also, of course, whatever pops up from the morass of his brain, bubbles up in its own odd little swamp gassy sort of way. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbite. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Boy, I'll tell you what, you can always tell the people who ate the green acid in the 60s,
do not eat the green acid.
I thought it was the yellow snow.
That's some song. I'm talking about Woodstock, baby.
Hey, I was at Woodstock.
So. Were you? Me too. Yeah. I didn't see you there.
You think?
This is the funny thing. I know a lot of people who over the years have said they were at Woodstock.
Yeah.
And if you look at them with a straight face and said, I didn't see you there, they start making excuses.
Well, it was
the size of a city.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. It was my introduction as an adult to the New York State Thruway, you know, And then
that's the part you remember. All righty then.
And then I moved to Denver and... And then the movie came out, you know, they made the movie of Woodstock, and anybody I ever was watching that movie, I saw it, you know, 2-3 times.
Sure.
There I am, see? And I go, oh yeah. And one person said, oh yeah, I saw you. No, you didn't. I didn't even see me.
Right, I did the same thing.
Come on, a sea of humanity.
That's what I tell people. I say, yeah, watch Woodstock. I'm in it. Watch the movie.
I'm there.
I'm there.
There are people that have frame by frame through to find things in movies.
Well, somebody got a picture of me somewhere.
Well, I was in another movie, too. It was called Vanishing Point. You ever see that movie?
I did not.
Yeah, Vanishing Point. I was working in a newsroom in Denver, and the back of my head is in that movie.
Wow.
Isn't that exciting?
I was walking down a street in New York. And a guy comes barreling around the corner and knocks me down.
Right.
Dustin Hoffman filming.
Tootsie?
No. Marathon Man.
Marathon Man. Oh, one of my favorite movies. Yeah.
So I wasn't in it, but I cushioned his fall to the sidewalk.
All right, before I let you go, one other movie at trivia, and your partner there probably knows this. I'll bet he does. There is a scene in Star Trek IV. The Journey Home.
Oh, he knows it.
The Search for Whales.
The Search for Whales. That's right. There is a scene
in Scotland
that they were shooting on the street. What happened in that scene that is absolutely astonishing that they could never make happen again, and it happened by accident?
Yeah, they were looking for the nuclear vessels.
The nuclear vessels.
Nuclear vessels. And
right.
This sweet little blue-haired old lady comes up. I think they're in Alameda because they were trying to find the Alameda Naval Base.
And she was not a member of
the crew. She was not a member. She didn't notice the crew. She didn't notice the cameras.
Right. It wasn't actually a little old lady. It was a reasonably attractive young woman. But you're on the mark on that. I just went back to watch it a couple of
times. There's a lot of trouble between the little old ladies and the... He's
confused on those.
They liked it so much because it was so spontaneous. They had to track her down, make her join the Actors Union, and pay her.
Exactly. And you go look at that scene, and you'd swear. I mean, it was so natural, and yet she has to be an actress.
Yep.
It was so well done. Oh, I don't know. I think they're over in Alameda, and then he says. Yeah, Alameda, that's what I'm trying to say. So I don't know where that was great.
The other scene was a little old lady there.
That's very funny.
She knows nothing about Star Trek, didn't recognize Walter Koenig, didn't recognize the Starfleet uniform, didn't see the dozens
On the other hand, he kept a straight enough face to make it a good take.
Well, a lot of actors have said that. In fact, we just came back from a convention 2 weeks ago. You keep acting until you hear the director say cut.
That's the way it works.
Backing up half a second for our previous caller who knew all the answers.
Lori?
Lori, yeah.
blocker.
I did find a couple of references that it may not be the sound driver not working. It may actually be the sound control program, SND32, whatever the name of it is. So I found a link and posted it in our link list. You can try running the system file checker and see if that reinstalls the sound control program, or you can expand it back out of your cabs.
There you go. Well done.
Something else to try.
Well done. We'll talk about the poll in a minute, but poor Ron's been on the phone for, he must think it's 3 hours now. So we're going to go to Ron from Greece. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Got a question for you guys. I have an IBM ThinkPad computer.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is it's very similar to the last caller that you had. I was using it in the Windows Media Player, and I was playing with the sound like an equalizer type of thing. And all of a sudden, the sound itself became very distorted, and I couldn't convert it back. I had some people at the office that run computer programs or know about computers delete the sound card like she did, and then when we rebooted it, tried to bring it back up again, and it has the same distorted sound. We played it with earphones, thinking that that would make a difference to see if it was a sound card, same type of thing. Another guy, what he did is he installed another sound program called Winamp.
Mm-hmm.
When he installed Winamp, it plays beautiful. Any music that I have on there plays beautiful, just like it did in Windows Media Player. So I tried to delete Windows Media Player.
Yeah, you can't.
And it won't let me delete it. Even reinstalling the new version 11 still doesn't do anything. So the only time I can really play music is through Winamp, which is fine. Except when you're surfing the net,
right,
and something comes on, it wants to go back to Windows Media Player, and I just don't know what to do.
Well, I think you've got the same issue, and I think what Steve just said should solve it. Go ahead, re-explain that.
You can try to run System File Checker, depending on what version of Windows you're in. It's easiest way is to go to Start, Run, and type SFC, SFC. If you're running XP, you have to do /scan now.
Okay.
And that will run the system file checker and reinstall any damaged Windows system files.
Okay.
For that specific file, if you happen to know the file name, you can expand it from the cabs, or you may have to reinstall Windows on top of Windows.
Okay, and that's what I really didn't want to do is because last time I had a friend do that, they had to, take everything out and reinstall and then I had to load all my programs.
Right.
If you install Windows on top of Windows, you don't have to do that. If you replace Windows, then you do have to reinstall all your programs again.
Okay. And one last question, guys. I have a wireless keyboard set up in a docking station.
Yeah.
And what happened is I had, I think the name of the wireless keyboard was Gyros or something. It was a great wireless keyboard and mouse, but they no longer make it. So I bought the Microsoft version, the Pro version. And for some reason, I have no range on it. I've replaced the batteries on it. Is it just something where it should work out of the box, or do you think there's a setting that I don't have right?
No, it works or it doesn't. I mean, basically, there's no up the ante. You're stuck with whatever it, however it works. Now, I don't remember if that particular one is actually radio wireless or...
Yeah,
IR wireless.
And then Bluetooth is the new wireless. There's three different wireless peripheral standards. What are the thing about standards? There's just so many to choose
from. Exactly. One of the problems with wireless in the 2.4 gigahertz, 2.4,
yeah, 2.4 gigahertz,
gigahertz range is that everything is on that same range.
Okay.
So if it's an RF device.
Right. So you've got cell phones that are... that are wireless, or not cell phones.
Portable phones.
Portable phones.
Microwave oven.
Right, microwave. All kinds of things are on that 2.4 gigahertz thing, wireless speakers. Pretty much anything you own that's wireless is on that same frequency.
I specifically look for the 900 megahertz wireless phones, so it won't interfere with my airport network.
Yep.
So that's a problem with the RF. And then there's also line of sight, but you usually don't have to worry about that with a blocking. Through metal walls, you don't have to worry about that with a keyboard because you're right next to the computer.
Exactly. With almost has to sit on top of the desk, right?
Yep.
Virtually, even though it's wireless, it might as well be wired.
Yeah. With the IR wireless systems, it is line of sight, so it has to be pointed directly at the receiver.
Okay.
But it doesn't have the RF interference issues. None of them are perfect.
Okay.
Right.
And should I go to the web page that you guys just mentioned for Lisa, the former caller? Will that have the download that you were talking about fixed for her?
It's specific instructions on how to reinstall the sound control panel.
Okay.
But you can take that analogy and find the program that you're missing.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. There you go. Now, before we get back to the phones, I do want to talk a little bit about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. This week's poll was about internet radio stations, because there is there's been a saga going on. As you probably heard at some point somewhere, starting today, as a matter of fact, new federal rules requiring higher royalty payments to the music industry from webcasters, both commercial and non-commercial alike, are scheduled to take effect.
Not just higher, ridiculously higher.
Ludicrously higher.
Ludicrous speed. No.
In recent days, internet radio outlets have been stepping up negotiations with Sound Exchange, the nonprofit, wholly owned entity of the RIAA, charged with collecting the fees over compromises aimed at blunting the increase's impact. Now public radio at least says it has reached a temporary agreement with the record industry. What's happened is the theory is that today, July 15th, they're supposed to start paying ridiculous sums of money in order to continue to be able to broadcast music.
And grandfathered back a year for something you've already aired.
Right. And grandfathered back a year. And what the RIA, what the most webcasters have been saying is they're going to have to shut down because they can't afford the payments. On the other hand, there's been some recent negotiations that is kind of encouraging, but not, you know, great. So the problem is a bunch of people made some statements, including Sound Exchange Executive Director John Simpson, who outlined a number of offers that his group has made to webcasters. One of them was characterized by published reports as a pledge to delay enforcing collection of the new fees until all the new negotiations had ended, which prompted a lot of rejoicing among the blogosphere. The problem is Simpson's statement was misinterpreted. What Simpson really meant was that Sound Exchange has already offered to freeze small webcasters required payments at historic levels through 2010. Assuming that those negotiations conclude successfully, then the small webcasters would be paying the old rates, so it would not make sense for them to start paying the new rate. But if the negotiations break down, then the new rates prevail. Now, this doesn't have anything to say about people like us when we podcast, or if we ever wanted to webcast soundbites, since we created and therefore own the content.
Yeah, we're not playing any copyrighted music in the middle of it.
Right.
So that's the trick.
Well, we got a couple of lines here and there.
Our bumpers, yeah, we might have to do something about that. I heard a really interesting theory about why the rates are basically tripling or some ridiculous thing like that. Yeah. And they're saying, you know, when you go into a negotiation, you ask for the moon and hope you just, you know, get a mountain.
Right.
So the sound people went to the FCC and said, we want to triple the rates, thinking the FCC would counter with, how about double? And instead the FCC said, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've really hit a good, interesting topic. The people at Sound Exchange, you know, they're scam artists is what they are. Bless you.
Bless you.
And so basically what's happening is a lot of small webcasters, people that just do it out of their basements or that type of thing, that want to have their own radio shows and things of that nature, are all shutting down their servers today or yesterday or Friday. They're gone. And with my other job, my station, luckily we didn't have to pay as much as some of the other people because we're non-commercial.
Right.
But the rates are all over the charts. Like a company like Clear Channel or something like that are going to be paying tons of money as part of these new regulations.
Just because they have more money, and that's not fair.
Exactly,
either.
Exactly. But even small, you know, there was all these things, like you said, out on the blogs and stuff about these private webcasters going, we just can't afford it. We got to shut down. We're done. We're done for good.
And it's not that the RIAA wasn't getting money. They weren't getting what they thought
plenty
was
of
enough money.
Yeah, they get enough money. You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, they get enough money. I mean, you've got artists out there that their music cannot be heard anywhere else.
Right.
So you put it on the air for them, and now they say, well, we want money now.
On the other hand, don't forget, if you're not a member of the RIAA, right? If you're now, what about like if I'm a garage band and I want to do my music, or I do garage band music, nobody who's signed with anybody anywhere for anything, that doesn't count. I still can't do it.
I don't believe so. It's very confusing
how can they possibly regulate music they don't have any control over?
Well, but keep in mind, you've got the Sound Exchange thing, which I believe is just for the composers and things of that nature. Then you've got ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, and all those, which are the other end of this, which you've got to pay them as well. You've got to pay them to be over the radio. You've got to pay them to be over the Internet. Now you've got Sound Exchange coming in the picture, saying we want to collect. And again, I believe it's for the composers and writers and things like that. Is what SoundExchange is dealing with.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, if I've got music, if I've been recording garage bands who haven't signed with anybody, they don't belong to any organization whatsoever.
You don't get a cent, from what I understand. You have to be protected by, you know, part of the ASCAP, how on the back of CDs you've got the ASCAP, EMI, that type of thing. So, again, it's very confusing, and a lot of webcasters are going, rumors flying about $1,000 fines per day or, to $100,000.
So all those people who have webcasts that are strictly talking, no
you're
problem.
Fine. Not a problem. That's
if
why
you play music, you're doomed. Unless you wrote the music.
Exactly. You're done. Unless you wrote the music. And there's a lot of webcasters that literally shut down Friday or Saturday because they don't want to get in trouble. They're done.
The current proposal is $50,000 per year.
Thomas H. Cruz on a
for webcasters who agree to provide more detailed reporting of the music they play and work to stop users from engaging in stream ripping, which is the person at the other end rips your stream. How are you going to control that?
Well, the interesting thing about it is
$50,000 a year for some guy who wants to play music on his own little podcast. That's ridiculous.
Well, see, what's happening is a lot of people are getting freaked. I spent the entire week on the phone with SoundExchange because I was a little nervous for our web stream as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "What's the deal?" And he goes, "Well, basically, if you haven't paid, if you've had your web stream up since 1999 or 2000,
right,
you've got to pay back fees if you have not paid SoundExchange. And there's interest on top of that. There's late fees on top of that." And the guy told me, he's like, "I don't know where people are getting this $2,000-$3,000 a day fine thing unless you owe millions and millions and millions of dollars in back fees." Okay? So it's one of those things where there was just a lot of stuff going around the web about people getting scared, thinking, "Oh my God, what am I going to do next? I can't afford these fines." When in reality, it's not that much if you get yourself current.
Assuming you've paid.
Right. Assuming you've paid, exactly.
A lot of these podcasters have never paid a penny to anybody.
Exactly. And, the interesting part about it is we, every quarter, we have to submit 2 weeks of spin information, music spin information. And that's how they somehow figure out how much they pay these various artists. In a format like ours, it's impossible to do that.
We're
constantly changing the music. It's not like a top 40 station or a country station where it's the top 40 tunes and that's it.
Right.
You know, the craziest thing is I sat in at a commercial radio station once. We were just chatting with the DJ, and he was taking requests. Then you hear this on the air all the time, call in your requests. So I said, "Yeah, we'll get that on the air soon," and just hung up. And I said, "Well, aren't you going to write that down?"
"No."
"Right. If it's in rotation, it will come up within an hour or so. If it's not in rotation, we're never going to play it anyway."
it's a crazy thing. Like I say, it's got webcasters running for the hills. They don't know what's going on. You've got, like I say, you've got people that just do it out at our house for fun, and they could be fined, or they could be, chances are, the guy told me on the phone, he's like, "We don't have time to chase down everybody." But he goes, "If we find people that are doing that, they're done."
Once you get popular, we have your own little podcast, then you get popular, and suddenly they go back 10 years.
So if I were to start a podcast where I talk, and I had royalty-free music that was my bumpers,
right?
Or my open and close, then I'm okay.
If you wrote the music.
Right. Or somebody wrote the music for me and said, "Here, this is for you. It's just for you."
There's the whole PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com where people intentionally have written music for podcasts. They're not copyright-free, but they're royalty-free. So podcasters can use them.
So that should be usable.
I mean, it's one of those.
Right, but who knows until somebody comes and says you're illegal.
Right.
Right.
Well,
our ASCAP does something like we're going to suck you all in, even if you're not members. We're going to work for your common good, even though you're not a member. So we're going to sue everyone on your behalf.
Well, I don't know how
reverse class action suit.
I got to be honest. I have no idea how this got through Congress because it just doesn't make sense.
I don't know how
a lot of things got through
Congress.
Well,
no one understood it and said, "Okay."
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, "Guys, come on. Don't you have anything better to worry about right now?"
I mean, ain't that the truth? But, I mean, I can understand if Clear Channel weren't paying their dues or, something of their size. Then I could see there's got to be some sort of legal redress. But
exactly.
Cheese and crackers. These are people who have 8 listeners.
Well, and that's the thing. But it blew up so big that people just got scared and shut down.
Yep.
And so they're done. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if people started popping back up, but who knows? You'll never know if somebody's going to come to you and say, "Okay, where's my money?"
Well, the same thing happened, what, 10 years ago when the Internet first started getting big, and there were little Internet radio stations everywhere, and somebody cracked down on it, and they all disappeared. iTunes has an Internet radio stream system built into it that a lot of people miss, and in fact, that's your poll of the week, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
we're talking about this.
We're talking about this, yeah. And there used to be dozens, hundreds of Internet radio stations listed there, and now it's down to just dozens.
Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of them are overseas.
Yeah.
I listened to one for a while that came out of Czechoslovakia, of all places, and I never understood what the guy was saying, but I love the music.
Well, Sound Exchange is a not-for-profit group, okay? So you got to know they're working with very limited resources, number one. Number two, I mean, you know, let's be honest.
You did that with a straight face. I'm very impressed.
What? Did what?
Sound Exchange is an arm of the RIAA.
They are a not-for-profit organization. I will bet you money on that.
I know they are.
Okay, yeah. So, your point.
Hey, never mind. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, go
ahead. They're funded by the RIAA.
I understand, they're considered a not-for-profit organization.
That doesn't mean they have no resources. They're funded by the RIAA.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of my not-for-profit
that
we don't have any resources.
Exactly.
But anyway, you know, the guy even said on the phone, he's like, unofficially, we cannot crack down on every single webcaster out there.
Right.
You know, so it's really stupid. It's like Congress should really go back and kind of think of some other more important things to do.
At any rate, before we run out of time.
Organization.
Before we run out of time, that's about this week's poll. The question is, I listen to internet radio, not podcasts, and the choices are all the time, semi-regularly, once in a while, only if they're odd, purity baby, and they have radio on the internet, so vote there. When you're done, click on Give Us Your Opinion. Go to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. Or you can leave a message. And we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. And we're just going to go through calls at 28 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 32 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. And for those of you who were patient enough to stay on the line, thank you. We're going to start taking calls right now, starting with Rich in Churchville. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Yes, starting yesterday, my computer popped up blue screen. It said that I had to erase some software that was recently downloaded onto it or something. And then it went to a black screen. It said detecting error ray, and it's not letting me do anything.
Detecting what?
A-R-R-A-Y.
Oh.
Detecting error. I would guess that the first message was bogus.
Yeah.
I don't know of any message that tells you you have to
delete a specific file.
Yeah.
So what file did it tell you to delete?
It said anything that was previously downloaded onto my computer. When I turn it on, it comes up, it says boot menu, F10, and BIOS settings, F2, and then it goes straight to the detecting error ray, and it's not letting me do anything at all.
Okay, that's a whole separate problem. If it takes you to the boot menu and then you get detecting array, it's trying to find your hard drives.
And can't.
So that's actually a physical problem and not a software problem. Now, there may be a software problem that caused that, but it's possible you got some sort of virus that damaged your boot sector. But I think at this point, honestly, the best thing to do is to take it to a professional.
Do you by any chance have an 8-bit motherboard? Do you know?
I am not sure.
Yeah. This seems to be a common problem with 8-bit motherboards and NVIDIA video cards.
Right. But I would at this point, I'm sorry, Rich, but it's time to take it in.
All right. I was afraid of that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Somebody's going to have to take a look at that and see what the story is and deal with it on the spot. Anything we give you to do could work or could be very dangerous. Without sitting in front of it and seeing it, it's hard to lead you in a direction. Okie doke? Sorry. Our next caller is Joan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joan. What's your question?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. I am running Mozilla Thunderbird for my email.
Yep.
And couple months now, when I click on Get Mail, nothing happens at all. Then there's a little arrow right next to that I can click, and it says Get All New Messages, and I click on that. They used to come through when I did that, and now they don't at all. So the only way I can get my email is to go to the remoteregisterhour.com website. Now I'm wondering if I uninstall the Mozilla, will I lose all my emails?
Yes. Anything that you've already downloaded will be gone. But what it sounds like is happening is one of, well, you're running Windows.
Yes.
Are you running any sort of firewall?
That I could not tell you.
Are you running Vista?
No.
Okay.
No, it's XP.
And what is your antivirus program?
Norton.
I knew you were going to say Norton. And it's the full Norton suite, isn't it?
Yes.
Norton, okay, there's your problem. The Norton suite has a firewall built in. It has an issue.
It has issues.
The Norton firewall is running and is blocking Mozilla from doing its job. Now, the way to test this, and I would not recommend doing this under any normal circumstances, but if you were to go into the Norton suite and turn off the firewall,
okay,
I'll bet you get your mail.
Another one of the things Norton tries to do is scan inbound and outbound mail for viruses and spam. Sometimes that gets confused and it stops passing mail at all.
So what is the solution?
Well, the solution...
the solution is don't use Norton.
What do you suggest, McAfee?
Well, yeah, personally, I would go with one of the free ones.
Really?
Either AVG
okay.
At grisoft.com, G-R-I-S-O-F-T.com.
Okay.
You do, actually, you want to go to free.grisoft.com to get the free AVG, or... Avast, AVAST.com.
Okay.
And
that's all downloadable?
And that's all downloadable and it's free.
Okay.
As a test, you can turn off the Norton firewall without actually uninstalling the program. And you can tell it to turn off all the protections and see if that lets the mail pass through.
And it does, then we'll know it's Norton, obviously.
Yeah.
Deborah.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, you can try reinstalling Thunderbird.
Right.
And that shouldn't affect any existing mail.
Maybe. On the other hand, we have Bob on a cell phone who has a fix for Joan's problem. Bob, what's your fix?
Well, what I tried to do is it kept trying to update itself, and it wouldn't update, and then all of a sudden it wouldn't work. I'm using the firewall out of Computer Associates from Frontier.
Right.
And what I tried doing is I went as far back as 0.9, Thunderbird and try and reinstalling everything, and that didn't work. Finally, I had to go through and completely take out every file from Thunderbird individually. There was almost, it was like a corrupted file that was locked out. I couldn't get to it at all. And what I had to do was completely take it out file by file, and I put 2.0 and it works fine again. Now, Thunderbird has worked fine since you started recommending it how many thousands of years ago?
You're right.
And up until now, it worked great, and then all of a sudden, it stopped.
And then it got a corrupted file somewhere, and then removing it completely and then reinstalling it worked.
Right.
But of course, you lost all your mail.
Yeah, I lost everything. I lost my phone book. I lost everything.
Right.
But the point is, you had to take it out file by file.
Right.
You couldn't just uninstall it. You had to take each file out individually.
That makes sense. All right, thanks, Bob. There's one other thing for Joan to try as a last resort. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. We've got more phone calls on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back, boys. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Certainly. He's not answering.
I'm Rob Linton, sorry.
We are the Three Stooges. It is 44 minutes after the hour.
I don't know why I found that funny. We've only played it 150 times, but you are the Three Stooges.
I am. I have Curly's body, Larry Caroline, and Moe's attitude. I am the Three Stooges. We're back, and our next caller, hold on a second, would be Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Love the show.
Thanks.
Mini DVD cameras, the mini DVD cameras use the small disc today. And claim that they can be played back in almost any DVD
player.
Almost any. Yeah.
Almost any.
Almost any.
If you have a tray loading drive, you cannot use the smaller or odd sized discs with a slot loading drive.
No, in my computer, which is running Windows XP, I've tried it. I just wondered if there's settings I can change or a program that I can buy that'll read this little sucker.
In the camera, you have to finalize the disc to turn it into a playable movie disc. The way the camera works is it leaves the disc open so you can write on it again in the camera. So somewhere in the camera, there's a finalize or make compatible or complete session or something like that.
This is a Sony camera, and we were using DVD-R, and I think it was a DVD-RW. Does that matter in what media we use?
The R is more common.
Minus R,
yeah.
Yeah, minus, right.
Yeah, the RW you can erase and burn on again, so that's more convenient. So if you want it to be playable in the most players, use the minus R. For convenience, use the minus RW. But usually the price difference makes the R's better anyway.
Right.
Yeah. But the key is to change the setting in the camera then.
Right.
Well, it's not a change setting. There's something that will say finalize or end or close this disc or finish this or what. I mean, I don't know what the language they use in the Sony camera is, but there's something that essentially says, I'm never going to write to this disc again, and I want to be able to view it somewhere else.
Generally speaking, the mini disc camcorders are intended for people who just want to record video and then show it on their TV. If you actually want to import it into your computer and do some editing on it, it's much easier to use a mini DV camera.
Right. It saves it to a hard drive in the camera.
Either videotape or hard drive on the camera. It's easier to import it into a video editing program on your computer.
Right.
So
if you have software to edit that, right?
Well, yeah, you have to have software to edit it, but there are a lot of places that have that software.
Oh, okay.
Microsoft Movie Maker, as we mentioned earlier. And
what about HD with the hard drive and the camera? Editing.
You have to have A, an HD camera, B,
right,
an HD video to show it on, an HD player to show it with, and then when you edit it on the computer, you have to have enough RAM and enough hard drive space to edit HD, but it's certainly doable.
Okay.
And then the
So when I say enough RAM and enough hard drive space, I'm talking about gigabytes of each.
The HDV standard is a video standard for the video file. Then you have to worry about the media standard and whether you pick the HD DVD or the Blu-ray DVD to actually burn it onto a disc is the next problem. So we're running into
that. Depends on which burner you have.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But it's all doable. It just takes money.
Okay. We'll skip that.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, bye-bye.
Our next caller is, it looks like, John. John on a cell phone. Welcome, John. What's your question? John? Hey, there we go.
Yes, hello.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm calling to find out the difference between the Universal Bus 1 and 2. Is that a hardware difference or is it a software difference?
So it's hardware.
A little of both, but
you can't, you know, it's hardware.
You can't upgrade a 1 to a 2 just with new software.
No.
You have to replace the hardware.
Okay, because I'm running an older computer with the 1, and it's ME software, and I was just wondering if I could upgrade it to a USB 2 by just putting in the new driver.
You're still running ME?
Good thing Dave isn't here.
I am.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
contraindicated
these days.
Yeah. So you can put a USB 2 card in for $20.
Yeah. If there are ME drivers for it.
Yeah.
No, I don't have them. No, I was going to upgrade it to XP and hopefully upgrade the USB drivers to the number 2.
Yeah, no, you gotta add a different card to do USB 2. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with a lot more of your phone calls with Steve Ray. That's Steve Ray sitting right there. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour, and it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Sam from Greece, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hi. The Internet obviously has opened up a whole new world of marketing, so we're inundated with the advertisements, commercials, and you name it, spend $199 and make $5,000 sitting in your pajamas at home. How come you got out of your pajamas and went to work?
Yeah.
I'm serious. Did you ever hear of a good one?
Well, they're all based on the scale of population of the country. You see posts on telephone poles for years, and it was all, you know, make money fast, and it's stuffing envelopes. That used to be the quick way to make money fast. You
right.
get a penny in envelope, so you do 20,000 of them a week, you make some money.
Right.
So now it's internet posting ads, and the problem there is the bad guys have taken that concept and created tens of thousands of botnet computers where they post the ads for you, so one guy can sit back with a couple of keystrokes and earn a ton of money.
The big thing is the economics. If you were going to send out junk mail, you have to actually pay the post office to send your mail. So you didn't do it to as large an extent now as all you need is a list of addresses. It costs the same amount of money for you to send out one as it does for you to send out 1 million, and that cost is zero. So you send out 1 million, one guy answers, you made money.
With postal direct marketing, a 1% response is considered good and will pay for the cost of the mailing and earn whoever it is a little bit of money. But, you know, as Nick said, with the internet, one response, and if you send out millions of them, you'll get a lot. Like the guy we mentioned earlier, posted an ad for is your PC virus free? Click here to be infected. He's making money because people are clicking there.
Yep.
So it's possible. It's just kind of shady.
Yeah, it's just kind of shady. All right, thanks, Sam. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Well, my question is this: I'm using Outlook Express. And if I put two addresses in with the same last name, and I then go to interrogate the address book or send out a memo or email, only one of them appears.
Right.
The question is, what do I have to do to get the second address to pull up?
You need to
put on a given last name.
Try putting comma space first name.
I've tried that, and it doesn't come up. However, if I type in the person's name in the address, and then I hit send on the email, it will appear and say, hey, which one of these two do you want? So it's in there, but it does not present itself.
It's just bad programming on Microsoft's part.
Oh, my goodness.
And, hey, Joe, what a shock. I hope you were sitting down. And there's nothing you can truly do about that. I wish there were.
Except stop using Outlook Express.
Well, right.
Wow. Well, what's the quick alternative to Outlook Express then?
Thunderbird.
Oh, my God.
Thunderbird is free.
Yep, right.
You download it from Mozilla.com.
Okay.
Or GetThunderbird.com.
GetThunderbird.com, right.
Okay.
And when you install it, it will say, I see you've got Outlook Express. Do you want to import your stuff? And it will, and you say yes, and it imports it all.
Okay. I was afraid that maybe I had too many addresses in the book or something.
What Thunderbird will do for you is, as you begin to type names, it'll start putting up possibilities. And if there's more than one, you'll see them all, and you can pick the one you want.
Yeah, okay. So it's Thunderbird.com, huh?
Well, GetThunderbird.com.
Okay. Okay, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
I don't know. It's so easy to use Internet Explorer because it's right there on your computer when you get it. But it's really not, for me at least, the program that I would want to get stuck with. Before we go, I do want to talk to you Apple folks. Tainted QuickTime movies can get a system hijacked or lead to sensitive information being stolen. So update your... there is an update, QuickTime 7.2, so make sure you say yes to that automated download because... it can cause some serious problems in various systems. That's for Apple and Windows users alike. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom I did not get. Next week, call earlier, call more often. I want to thank Steve Ray, who wound his way here despite many obstacles.
Both of them sitting out in the other room.
I hope they weren't listening. And, of course, the mighty Rob Linton, who exercised himself so much about Sound Exchange. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week. It's 58 minutes after the hour. And you, and I want to thank you for having listened for the last couple hours to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.